Hello, and welcome to episode number 74 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. For those of us intimately familiar with the nuances of the so-called UFO phenomenon, the question of if there is a there or not is long settled. Those of us who've looked closely at the data gathered over the last 100 years or so, not to mention more ancient accounts that bear a striking resemblance to the descriptions of more modern encounters, have concluded that humanity is indeed being interacted with by intelligences that seem to arise from elsewhere. Now, whether the nature of that elsewhere is another solar system or another dimension of reality is a matter of some debate. Here I will argue, as I have for some time now, that these categories are generated from a perspective on reality that is limited and incomplete, better replaced by options that both include and transcend these outdated notions. But nevertheless, the evidence points not only to them having been here for pretty much as long as we've been around, but also to the very distinct likelihood that they played a major role in our seeding and later development as a species on this planet. Beyond these often agreed-upon notions comes the question regarding how many different groups of these others there are. Some will argue, based on a variety of factors, that what we may be observing is the actions of a single group or intelligence merely presenting in different ways over time. John Keel, a very influential figure in this field, largely argued for this perspective. One of the key data points for this view is that high strangeness, psychic influence, and elements of space-time distortion are present in the vast majority of these cases. To some, that startling overlap suggests a common source. Is this the only way to square this evidence, though? I would argue it is not. I believe a better fit for the data is that the ways by which these various groups of others are traversing domains to get here is what accounts for these common elements in experiencer accounts. Truth be told, I think it is our bias towards reducing complexity whenever and wherever we can that leads many to draw upon these somewhat superficial commonalities in order to leap to the conclusion that humanity is being manipulated by some singular overarching metaforce. Another reason why I think this being one group parading as many is not the best fit for the data is that the way these various others interact with human beings is quite different. To speak in very broad terms, some of these groups seem to tread lightly, asking us not to fear them and bringing messages of reconciliation and universal siblinghood. On the other end of the spectrum are groups that seem to view human beings more like how we view animals, as commodities to use towards their own ends, regardless of how much discomfort we may experience in the process. To be sure, there are many interactions with groups that also fall somewhere in between these two extremes. This variable treatment of human beings is a key data point demonstrating that these are different groups, often using similar means of travel, which I will argue is almost always interdimensional in nature, though that term will need some unpacking. Does that mean so-called abductions are always conducted by groups of alien others who are malevolent, perhaps even the very source of evil described in ancient religious texts? Well, no, I don't think it's quite that black and white. Nuance will be required throughout this discussion because, as with so much of reality, the details are complex. That said, I do believe one can begin to parse out the actions of different groups not only working towards different aims, but motivated by very different underlying levels of consciousness development from within the totality of the data available. And that very goal, the identification of specific patterns of contact and communication from within the overarching complexity of the data associated with the UFO phenomenon, is what will be the focus of this, the 74th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. I'd like to begin this week's episode by saying that the cosmology I'm talking about here, that will determine much of what I'm saying, is complex, ever-evolving, and ever more nuanced, and is created via a combination of the latest research coming out of foundations of physics, neuroscience, and evolutionary biology, along with experiencer literature research, comparative religious history, esoteric cosmological history, and my own encounters with non-human intelligence. A background in integral theory helps me to take both a multidisciplinary approach from within the sciences to this topic, while also incorporating different kinds of knowledge as well. Everything from revelations arising from the scientific revolution to insights gained in ancient esoteric traditions. As Ken Wilber famously said, everybody's right. At least to some degree, that is. In other words, if you have a tradition in human history that believed a certain thing about the world, it's very likely true to some degree, even if it is only partial and incomplete. As I say, it is complex, and it's taking me time to unravel it all, and it's still very much a work in progress. I won't be expounding on all of it in this episode, but I will outline some of the broad strokes. The rest will come in future episodes, or so we hope. Now, undoubtedly, lights and anomalous objects in the sky tend to get all the attention these days. But the real significance here lies in the contact made with the beings behind these different phenomena and objects or vehicles. Of course, this tends to get ignored by the mainstream media, even though this is the bigger story, and even though this has, at times anyway, garnered national attention. For instance, when Oprah covered abductions back in the 1990s. Of course, the kinds of encounters people have with these various non-human and non-conventionally human intelligences vary quite considerably. Even though there is a variety of experience described, everything from powerfully spiritually transformative experiences with beings who exude the very definition of love and light, to entities whose behavior is more like the stereotypical depiction of biblical demons, whose aim, it seems, on the surface of it anyway, is to basically terrorize the individual unfortunate enough to be having the encounter. And of course, there are also plenty of encounters that fall somewhere in between these two extremes. And here it should be noted that raw experience and interpretation, while related, of course, are not the same thing. That is to say, two people could have virtually the same experience and come away with very different interpretations of it. And often this extends to the ascribing of motive and intent to these various others that are encountered. As I've stated many times, these encounters are very often ontologically shocking, even if they later turn out to be regarded as a net positive, serving as a catalyst for an expansion of perspective and a deepening of spiritual values. Even though there is, as I just stated, quite a range of experience noted with this phenomenon, it is not uncommon for people to leap to the conclusion that all of these experiences are being generated by the same underlying intelligence, one that merely plays with our emotions and our intellects by parading in different guises, like a group of actors merely switching out masks and costumes to present the appearance of novel encounters, almost like a Shakespearean company. As I've stated previously, while I agree that certain superficial similarities do exist in these encounters, suggesting perhaps some connection between different manifestations of these non-human others, I think it's largely bias that leads to this conclusion that it may just be all one enterprise. That bias, I believe, is the product largely of a lack of imagination. The truth is that we have been so confident about the sufficiency of our model of the world as a Western civilization that we have been biased towards slotting these anomalous encounters into just one additional segment, the proverbial cherry on top, as it were, to mark our mapping of reality complete. Now, perhaps I'm being uncharitable to this viewpoint, you might suggest. Are there further commonalities that I'm glossing over? Well, I will say this. The historical literature of experiencer testimony does recount a similarity in residual effects, byproducts, or what you might call side effects of these various encounters, regardless of whether they are interpreted as positive, negative, or neutral by the individuals having the encounters. Does this mean it's all one enterprise after all? I would argue no. I think the ways some of these various groups are interacting with us, the nature of the communication and even the nature of how they traverse from one domain to another suggests some underlying overlap in terms of methods, but that's often where the overlap stops. And noting a similarity in terms of space-time distortion and telepathic communication, of course, doesn't imply the same entity or group of entities is responsible. It just suggests that perhaps for any being coming here from these other domains, these are the means by which they make their way into our midst and conduct their communication. I think it's a mistake to rely on these commonalities alone to leap to the conclusion that these are all part and parcel of one underlying intelligence. And that's partly because even if you allow for some discrepancy in terms of a shifting perspective on an encounter over time, given the advent of additional nuance and clarity, one cannot dismiss the stark differences in the nature of some of these encounters. Again, to paint in broad strokes here, on one end of the spectrum, we have beings whose appearance and behavior provokes comparisons to angels of various religious traditions, while others present the very opposite impression, bringing to mind beings whose aim is to sow discord, terrorize, and ultimately rob a human being of all feeling of agency, sovereignty, and dignity. And of course, as I already stated, there's plenty that falls in between these two extremes as well. I also want to bring to your attention that when we talk about comparing these different accounts, including accounts from ancient history with more recent accounts, you need to look past the vocabulary we use, because obviously ancient people didn't have the same terms we have and didn't consider extraterrestrial even a possibility. So keep that in mind. When you get past those superficial differences and those superficial differences in vocabulary based on what's available at the time for an experiencer to relay the encounter to someone else, there is a lot of overlap. Now, I think the more fitting interpretation of this diverse data is that what we're witnessing slash experiencing are encounters with different groups of entities, and that's been the case for our entire history, basically. I think the more fitting interpretation of this diverse data is that what we're witnessing slash experiencing are encounters with different groups of entities, though perhaps sometimes the means in which they reach us has some parallels, which, as I've already stated, helps to explain some of the common elements we see evidenced over time. Now, here it should be noted that I would argue that the ones we've been interacting with are very often coming from a higher level on the spiral of dimensional development. Reality is altogether different on a higher level. And regardless of a particular group's attitude towards us, they are more capable, as reality at that level is such that, among other differences in characteristics, form bends to thought. In other words, it's mind over matter for them. It should also be noted here, importantly, that higher levels here doesn't necessarily imply a higher moral code amongst all of these various groups of others. We're just talking about the nature of the reality construct. That is higher. And that's a very important distinction to keep in mind. They are more capable. They have capacities we do not have because of the level of reality they're coming from. But that doesn't necessarily make them our moral superiors. Now, if I were to choose a word to describe the common denominator between these different encounters, it would be this: interdimensional. I think that whether these beings or groups of beings are benevolent or malevolent, or to state it in a more nuanced and perhaps realistic way, mature or immature, they are coming here, said in quotes, from outside the construct of this dimension of reality. I would say physical reality, but as I've stated on previous podcasts, I think this is a misnomer. I think we're having an experience within a field of mentation, a dreamscape, if you will. And this common dreamscape we all inhabit has internal consistency to it, including the rendering of a mostly consistent experience of materiality. Though again, importantly, when that seems to not apply is when these others from outside this dreamscape or field of mentation are interacting with us. And I would argue that this is because reality, again, said in quotes, is made up of overlapping fields of mentation, or interpenetrating dimensions, if you prefer that language. And it is that interpretation of dimensions that produces, as a side effect, some of the residual elements that we often colloquially term high strangeness. Now, does my saying that extra-dimensionality, being from beyond this construct, in other words, is something many of these groups have in common, mean that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is to be abandoned? No, on the contrary, I think what these beings are and where, quote-unquote, they're coming from is best described in ways that collapse our current models of possibilities. In other words, I think our reality consists of layers of dreamscapes that, to 3D beings like us anyway, tend to look like overlapping physical space-time constructs. And in that sense, many of these beings are both extraterrestrial and interdimensional, although some transcend even that multidimensional tapestry of these overlapping dreamscapes, but we'll save that discussion for another time. So with the mode of contact slash transport slash communication now covered, let's again turn to the diverse nature of experiences with non-human and non-conventionally human others reported over time. And by the way, for those who are unclear, I also include non-conventionally human in that description because very often people have encountered beings that look humanoid and sometimes even fully human, although they clearly are not from here, which again, as I've said before, suggests a common seeding program that's taken place across different planets and different star systems over time. Now, speaking again in broad strokes, the groups that make their way into our particular construct, our dreamscape, tend to be covered under one of the following types. Again, this is speaking just in broad strokes. Number one, there are some groups of others who respect the need to communicate in such a way as not to shock and overwhelm the human contact. Number two, there are other groups whose aim is precisely to shock and intimidate. In other words, the means in which they interact with us that is shocking and intimidating is designed to be that way. Third, there are groups who see the ontological shock and discomfort we experience as a means to an end in the process of achieving their own agenda. In other words, they see it as justified. And fourth, there are others still for whom shock is an unexpected and undesired byproduct of their contact with us. And obviously there's some degree of overlap between some of these, but that gives you four broad categories. Now let's break this down a little bit more. Group one, which again is these are some groups of others who respect the need to communicate in such a way as not to shock and overwhelm us. Now generally, this group also tends to conceal their identity from us, sometimes altogether, because they want to encourage that sense of us owning our own progress and our own decisions. They are also not dependent on exterior identity and so often don't manifest with either form or naming. In other words, they don't take a form at all. They might just be a thought that enters our mind, or they can take on different forms as the need requires. And they often don't even use names. They recognize each other based on energetic signatures. If they take on names, it is for our sake. Now, they respect free will and will guard it, both by being very cautious about their interference in our own reality and by rarely intervening even when we make less than optimal choices, both as individuals and as an entire civilization. Now, the second group, again, to remind you, that's the groups whose aim is precisely to shock and intimidate. Now, people here often bring up the Stockholm Syndrome, which was based on this thing that happened historically where some people who had been taken hostage began to identify with the needs and the belief system of those who had taken them. And later on, this was recognized as a psychological response to losing your sense of agency, that you would align yourself with your captors in such a way as to feel like you had more sovereignty after all. In other words, you're fooling yourself. So some people will argue this is the case with abductees who tend to say nice things about the groups that abduct them. Now, again, I think this is complex. I think there are some so-called abductions that are not meant to be traumatizing and they're not meant to be negative. Other times, I think there are cases where they very much mean to be negative. They very much mean to traumatize us. That's the entire point of the exercise. The over-the-top symbolism is meant to make the human feel like an animal. Many people have talked about how rape is really about domination and not about sexuality. I think this is very much true in these kinds of encounters too, which, not surprisingly, also sometimes have a sexual element. Again, that's not to paint in a completely broad brush and say that all sexual encounters with non-human others are negative. I'm saying that in these cases, sometimes the invasive ways they interact with us physically and even sexually suggests a desire to dominate us, to make us feel a loss of agency, sovereignty, and even nobility. These particular elements that are often, again, symbolic in nature, but meant to make us feel badly about ourselves, make us feel that we are mere commodities to these others, seems to be front and center with these groups, especially considering that they could obtain what they need with much less invasive means. In other words, when it comes to them needing to take genetic material from us, they could just gather a hair in the middle of the night, or they could raid a sperm bank. There's different ways they could gather genetic material without being so invasive. Really, when you think about the invasive nature of the way they interact with us, you have to consider that the symbolic nature is key. I also think some of these abduction accounts involve mind control and the planting of programming, perhaps for some future time, which may never happen, but I do think programming is part of what goes on as well, somewhat like what was depicted in the book and film The Manchurian Candidate. Now let's move on to group three. Again, there are different groups. These are the ones who see ontological shock and discomfort we experience as being a means to an end. In other words, they see it as justified. The ones who use fairly crude means to go about their business, including unnecessarily invasive medical procedures that don't have the over-the-top symbolic nature of some of the most malevolent types I already described. This is more of a business-like mentality rather than one meant to be cruel by design. While these ones certainly aren't going out of their way to make the contactee/abductee feel comfortable, neither are they attempting to terrorize or commoditize them like what happens with the more negative groups. In this sense, this particular gradation of contact group is not so much evil as they are immature. These ones who have more of a business-like demeanor are nowhere near a non-dual realization, which is where the purely benevolent ones are coming from. And like many Earthlings here on Earth presently, they see reality as a zero-sum game. For them to get ahead, some of us have to endure some discomfort. They are okay with this because they believe their superior status justifies these actions, much like we do when we dominate the animal kingdom present on our own planet. Now, this group, for whose aim ultimately is about conquest, they actually are comprised of different types and even different subgroups that have banded together in a kind of consortium that has its own hierarchy. And speaking of this consortium, I've come across evidence suggesting that a certain rogue group of humanity that view themselves as elite have technology provided by this consortium that allows this human group to actually be in contact with these others in the part of the galaxy they are coming from. And here we could name specific constellations that various satellites, for instance, are pointed towards, apparently for the sake of ongoing contact with this consortium of others. Now, the gradations of groups who feel the means justify the ends, who see existence as a zero-sum game, as I just said, are also the ones who are entering into accords with various Earth-human power broker groups in order to further their agenda. The humans who agree to these accords, like the ones they're making the agreements with, are still thirsty for power and define their own self-worth by their ability to dominate others of their kind. This human group see themselves as elite in regards to the rest of the human race and have made agreements with this consortium of others, obviously without consulting the rest of us, and in so doing are actually doing a disservice to the population as a whole. They, of course, find ways in their immature stage of consciousness to see what they're doing as justified. There have been cases where, for instance, abducted human beings have confronted these human military types, sometimes on board alien spacecraft, and they are surprised to find these Earth humans justifying their actions as allowing, for instance, a certain nation state to remain in power over the rest of the planet. In other words, this becomes their justification. And because they feel that their nation state is superior to the rest, this is therefore a justified means to an end. This is always the case with the ego-chasing element of humanity, whose only way of gauging success comes in being able to see themselves as above everyone else. In their own minds, they think they are serving the greater good by establishing order. Of course, this is a kind of order that they alone have defined and viewed as valuable. This is very close to the kind of thinking, justification, rationale ascribed to leaders of the so-called empire in the Star Wars franchise. In other words, they don't see themselves as evil or domineering per se. They convince themselves they are creating a more ordered totality. Not surprisingly, the consortium of others I described have a similar mindset. That's why reducing this to good versus evil is neither helpful nor very descriptive of the underlying reality. In reality, notions of right and wrong, or moral justifications in general, change and evolve as beings progress through the spiral of consciousness. Self-evident truths, for instance, are different depending on where you are on the consciousness spiral. Now, getting back to the non-human alien groups again for a moment, the most advanced of these others, of course, are far beyond this level of thinking, and with a non-dual realization fully in place, they recognize that to harm or dominate another is to harm or dominate oneself. But again, the less developed ones still operate under a mindset not so different from Earth human groups who seek to control and dominate others. The ultimate aim of these less evolved non-human intelligences could be described in one word: conquest. Now, not surprisingly, it is these ones who are conducting the majority of what have been deemed abductions, though there is a rogue Earth group that is also doing this. I'm talking about Earth humans. Okay, and now moving on to the fourth group. This is the group that, when ontological shock happens, it is a byproduct and it is unintended and undesired by the others who are actually contacting a human or a group of humans. Now, as in the case I described a few episodes ago, where beings interacted with a teenage couple and their young child, the beings were ultimately seen as very positive, given the opportunity for reflection. One of the contactees, a teenage father named Joe, said of these particular others, quote, "They don't seem to have bad qualities." And when the hypnotic regressionist asked, "What makes you feel they have no bad qualities, Joe? How can you tell?" he responded, quote, "They just seem so peaceful. I can feel it. I can feel what they're like," unquote. But again, initially, they were both shocked and dismayed by the encounter because it included elements such as the loss of the sense of a clear separation of self, common in these encounters with beings operating from a non-dual sense of reality, and because it involved the ontological shock of encountering beings that looked so unlike a human being. Now, considering we've talked about different kinds of groups, some groups that are very benevolent, very evolved, basically coming from a non-dual perspective on reality and the totality of all sentient life, and we've on the other end of the spectrum covered beings who seem to want to dominate us regardless of what it does to us, that perhaps begs the question for some of you, why aren't these more benevolent ones, these more evolved ones, intervening to stop the abductions, to stop the interference these others are running on our planet? Now this, like much of this, of course, is complex, it's nuanced. But I would say this, in general, there is a partition in place. That's my understanding, based on research and based on some of the experiences I've had as well. I believe there is a partition in place that prevents the majority of the negative groups from interacting with us and completely taking over the planet, which they would probably do if they had their druthers. That said, the partition is not 100% reliable. There are sometimes ways that these others can get in outside of the design of the partition. And in addition, and this is very, very important, because even the most evolved ones highly value freedom of will, if human beings are the ones that initiate, that reach out and initiate contact with a group of others that is not so benevolent, that is often allowed because that is considered part of the lesson we need to learn about who we're dealing with. So if we initiate and we make accords with them, then that is allowed within this partition and within this overarching understanding of a law of non-interference. And again, you look to some of our leaders said in quotes there who have made these accords. These are the people that have put us in this situation where sometimes abductions have been known about by human governments and allowed in exchange for technology, which a nation state or a group of elite leaders, which sometimes is beyond just nation states, believe will keep them in power, which they believe is ordered and for the best interest of the totality. Of course, they do this without asking any of us. And of course, that mentality is coming from a stage of consciousness that leaves much to be desired. Now, earlier I mentioned how some of these encounters fit depictions of angelic encounters within various religious traditions. Other encounters fit depictions of so-called demons from Christian theology or jinn from Islamic tradition. I don't think this is coincidental because here too I believe our traditional categories of distinction, ET versus interdimensional, angel or demon versus alien, etc., collapse into a more overarching category. These beings are all travelers across different dimensions of reality, as ultimately we are as well, vibrating at different frequencies depending on the level of ascension of the being slash group. There is a trickiness to sorting out the UFO phenomenon because spirituality, or metaphysical reality if you prefer, is involved. But that doesn't mean one religion or another is validated after all. It means that those religions, to various degrees, retain a memory of the underlying reality. And while this is the case, we should remember, as I often point out on this show, there's a difference between raw experience and interpretation. That is to say, just because these different religions retain a memory of these kinds of encounters with interdimensional beings, some benevolent, some malevolent, some in between, we should remember that how they interpret that and how they build dogma sets around that, that's a human enterprise to a large degree. But the raw experience is still retained in the ancient scriptural traditions. And now I'd like to leave you with a few concluding thoughts. I still contend that the most significant revelation arising from the UFO phenomenon is that the reality construct we've been accustomed to in Western civilization is but a sliver of a much larger multidimensional tapestry. Now, to address the question as to how the most developmentally evolved groups of others are responding to our present situation, how this plays out, is being considered based on how it impacts our overall spiritual slash energetic makeup and progression, of which this particular iteration is but one aspect. And speaking of this iteration, we should remember that past, present, and future are point of view approximations from within this iteration, and they are not actually descriptive of the underlying reality. Time and space are modes by which we think and not conditions in which we live, as Einstein said. Think of time not in linear terms, but more like a circle, where energy impacting the whole can travel in both directions. Your present actions can and do impact not just your future, but also your past. And even now, said in quotes, your higher self is guiding you from the relative viewpoint of your future to make advantageous decisions in your ultimate best interest. It's very important to remember that, in the most ultimate sense, this is about the creation, as figments of the Creator, the overarching cosmic intelligence, at play. You cannot ultimately get it wrong, therefore. Some just take longer than others. Now, there are real consequences to your decisions, so make decisions based on the best interest of your most complete self, not getting lost in the whirlpool of the temporariness of this present incarnation. But remember that even when you end up off track, as it were, that there will always be opportunities to right the ship, even if that's in another lifetime and not necessarily in human form. And to this point, while those of us tuned into a podcast like this one are here largely because we're all fascinated by the grand mystery that is the UFO phenomenon and general paranormality, I think it's important to remember that while these matters are addictively captivating, and pursuing them does indeed help us to understand more of reality, the most important takeaway from the cosmology I'm describing here, one that collapses so many traditional categories, including alien versus angel, and the physical versus the spiritual or metaphysical, is that us taking responsibility for our development as beings who are ultimately facets of the one underlying cosmic intelligence is of the utmost importance. And to get caught up in the spectacle of the phenomenon without recognizing that underlying revelation would be to miss the true point of the exercise. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.